Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the program. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. My guest today is a musician, and some call him the greatest electric bass player of all time. It is wonderful to invite Jeff Berlin to my humble program. Jeff, how are you doing this fine day?
The greatest bass player of all time. Does that include the whole universe times infinity plus one?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, then I accept. If it was infinity plus one, it would be silly for me to refute that. I'm not the greatest bass player of all time. I'm a bass player who is dedicated to the bass, loving it deeply, passionately, and that has not abated even as I steadily get older and older. And I think that maybe that's sort of the element that some people pick up on when they hear me play is, I don't play for the accolades per se, but I don't even play for the business end of it. I'm a really foolish, naive kind of guy. I play because it's in me and necessary emotionally in order to sustain a mental balance to play bass and play music that I find interesting, and it purges me, it cleanses me. And it may sound poetic, but that's how it is. And that's why some people have been extremely kind about what they've said about my bass playing.
You've just released a very interesting album, High Standards. It showcases the bass. And before we really get into the interview, I'd love to play a track from High Standards. Would you mind if I played Groovin' High?
The Great Dizzy Gillespie Tune. No, that's a fun track. That one is a fun track. That's what I call a deep breather.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Jeff, it's always rude to ask someone's age, but I've read your resume, and my guess is you've been around the block just about as many times as I have. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of who Jeff Berlin is?
Well, not only have I been around the block, but I've built it. I'm 57 years old, 57 and a half. I'm a guy who comes from Long Island, New York. I grew up in a town called West Hempstead, Long Island, New York. I grew up on a street called Eagle Avenue in West Hempstead. And I took violin lessons when I was 5 years old because my father determined that I had a musical ability. I could imitate. He was an opera singer, and I would, before I spoke proper English, I suppose, if, you know, I would sing arias, I would sing I can still remember them. Si tra I ceppi aleri tol della mia feri splendera. My dad used to sing that when I was 2 years old or 1.5 years old, and he'd hear me singing it, and I could imitate the sounds. And the interesting thing is I still remember those pieces, several of them. And so when I got a few years older, I started on violin lessons, and that was my introduction. And one of the greatest, most wonderful things that my father ever did for me was to get me into music. Amazing.
Oh, you've just blown me away. I have spent hours researching you, and I didn't know any of this.
Well, I'm a conservatory-trained violinist. I was a symphony violinist. I mean, no major New York Philharmonic, regional symphonies to be sure. But I've done recitals, I've done string quartet, quintets, trios, classical performances. But all the time, to be honest, my heart wasn't in it. I never really loved that music. And so when the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan, and when I became taken with rock and roll in, back in about 1963-64, because I am 57 and a half, I slowly weaned off the violin with no regrets and became a bass player. But
why the bass, though?
Well, it was a matter of practicality. I spent 10 long years as a baby, fully immersed in conservatory training. It was not entirely a simple and easy time. And I felt that since I really had learned so much from those years, so that's why later on, of course, I'm grateful, that I said, if I just get a bass guitar, it's principally the same name strings as a violin, just tuned in opposite direction, that a violin from low to high went G, D, A, E, low to high, and a bass from high to low goes G, D, A, E. A violin is tuned in fifths, a bass is tuned in fourths. And I thought, well, this is easy. I mean, there's no literature back in the 60s that was even remotely as demanding as the literature that I studied. So I picked up a bass guitar out of sheer laziness. I didn't want to work to study, to play. I just wanted to pick it up and do my thing.
I have to admit that when my good buddy Billy James, who I'm sure you're familiar with,
certainly am,
asked if I'd be interested in talking with you, I jumped at the chance. In my mind, you are a musical anathema. You love jazz, yet you toured with the Yes. You were courted by Van Halen. I mean, what genre of music do you actually like to play?
Well, there's several hats that I wear. I wear the leader's hat, and I wear the sideman hat, and the sideman hat varies. I have a particular skill ability through my years as a bassist where I'm very, very good, forgive me, at several different styles. I'm a very, very good R&B and funk bass player. I'm a very, very good rock bass player in pretty much most of the styles that rock, you know, it's a broad title rock. And in jazz, which is the hat that I wear when I'm, let's say, a leader, I've spent most of my time examining and looking into it. See, I paid a price for my investigative sort of interests. Had I gotten into music to make it, do you follow, I would have been way more famous, let's say, and made way more money. There is a little bit of a catch to it. I knew that because my profound interest has always been in finding out how do you get sounds out of this instrument? How can you locate different notes? How can I achieve what my heroes on other instruments have achieved? And because I've been so dedicated to those particular things, as a bass player, it didn't quite fit into what most people required from bass players. So I pretty well designed my own little corner of music because a lot of guys didn't feel that I could just play it simple. I could, and I would. The money's right. I'm not a total snob. I'm a businessman somewhat. But people want legitimacy out of the musicians they hire, and I went for the art, so much so that I frankly sabotaged my own career with no regrets, Simon. No regrets. I knew I was doing it. I knew it was happening, and I had no problem with it because, frankly, the bass is still in the dinosaur age in this era. Most people really don't recognize it outside of a few jazz and jazz rock situations. You'll never see a bass solo with it, certainly not on a pop record. That ain't never going to happen, at least in the near future. You won't really find that many excellent, let's say, virtuoso, or let's forget virtuoso, outstanding frontman-type rock bass players. You can find a few guys, the Geddy Lees and the Billy Sheehans. I think Les Claypool is very highly respected. You know, there's a few guys, but in the scheme of the number of rock bands, it's so few you can name them. So I went for the art out of my own desire to be a good musician and cut my own throat while doing it, and I didn't once, not sitting here with you, not ever, regret it, not once, not for a single moment.
The bass is a vital instrument in any band, yet it tends to go so unrecognized.
Right.
Why is that?
Because the music that presents the musicians in the group is not designed to present the bass guitar above and beyond a principal, simple demonstration or performance on the instrument. You follow? If you listen to, let's take any band, let's even take, trying to think of a group, you take Rush. In Geddy Lee's case, the bass is built into the fabric of the band in order to be demonstrated. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But you take a lot of other bands, let's say, and I'm trying to think of an example, but none's coming to me right now. All right, let's go with the Rolling Stones. The bass is not built into the fabric of the success of that group. It may blend. It certainly will have good bass parts. Even McCartney wrote his unique bass parts, but the uniqueness of the Beatles was not the bass playing. It was really the vocals and the harmonic presentation and the unique elements. But you will get a George Harrison solo, and you do recognize the comping, let's say, behind Day Tripper on John Lennon's behalf, you know. So a lot of bands and a lot of a group presentation didn't include bass because, quite frankly, bass players are not geared. They don't seek it. They don't really practice it, and they don't know how to present themselves, in general, as a unique, outstanding instrument, even in an ensemble presentation. That's why the bass is still in the woods.
As I understand it, at some very, very short notice, you ended up touring with Yes. I believe you had something like 3 days to get up to speed.
Yes.
How did that deal come about?
It came about because in the inside, I'm an insider's dream, as it were. You know what I mean? The guys in the industry know me. They know what I do. And so when their bass player had eaten bad shellfish, instead of canceling the tour, interestingly, I played with Bill Bruford, but it was Steve Howe who recommended me. They called me up on a Sunday night. Monday, I went and bought the CDs. I wrote out the bass parts Monday and Tuesday, read them down, and then Wednesday or Thursday, I think it might actually have been, we were on the road touring. And for me, it was, I mean, I was honored, and I am honored. It was a wonderful hang with wonderful people, gave me a chance to play in front of way more people than I ever would have as Jeff Berlin, the leader, and I know that. I appreciated it. But as a musical event, it was pretty much what I do when I teach myself music. I could write out parts in a second. I can hear parts pretty quickly, and I filled that chair rather quickly, but I've done that as a student and as a sideman bass player for years. They had sessions in the New York in the 70s. And interestingly, there were a few guys that were top session guys there, and I was trying to work my way into the scene. And I would fix a lot of these guys' bass parts. And I never knew why they didn't call me first, probably because I didn't have the big name that they did in the New York scene. But for a long time, they'd call me in and say, well, so-and-so played this bass part, and it really doesn't sound he's out of time or something's not right. And I would fix it, and they go, oh, there it is. It's great. And I go, oh, great, I'm now on the A-list. And it took me a long time to move up that ladder, but that was my skill level. I could hear things, and I could fix them. I could identify stuff, and I can come up with a part. And that's how it worked with the Yes gig. And I loved it. I really did.
Playing with Yes is a very different world from the jazz world. I mean, you can just easily move from one genre to another?
In one half of 1 second. It is so easy. And I'll give you an example. Can you cook an omelet and then maybe cook a steak? Or can you drive to your house down the usual path, but then there's a detour, and now you'll have to drive off to the side streets and work your way around to the back? And the answer is sure. If you know what you're doing in these instances, you can wear several hats and instantly switch between them. In music, I've spent many years before I was, a leader, I spent a lot of time as a sideman. We need a bass player to do this. Fine. I'm a good reader from the violin days, you know. I can read very well on bass clef, too. And I played, just name the gig, anything, you know. We all like to brag about how we all played strip clubs when we were kids, you know. And I did, too. I played strip clubs, you know. And you play the 20-seaters and the 10-seaters and the 15-seaters, and you played on parties and bar mitzvahs, and you read, and I played in a big band, and you play these things. And then we musicians with a rep, become established because we've now played on more visible recordings or performances. That happened to me, so I got more well-known, but I can't dismiss my years of apprenticeship. You follow?
Oh, yeah.
So I could swap instantly. I could sit in with the Who tonight. If I know the song, I can do it. Does it sound like bragging? No, because I won't brag about things that I'm not sure I can do. That would be ridiculous. In this, I'm comfortable. And I know what I can do because I've done it. The Yes thing is just an example. I'm good at these things. And so, yeah, I can play legitimately as powerful as any rock bass player who ever played. I'm certainly not the virtuoso in rock that Billy Sheehan is. The remarkably unique sound of Geddy Lee. But I'll pop it, man. I will pop it. And in funk and in jazz and different styles. And I can read if they open a new show. If Cats opens, I will play the show pretty much tonight. That's a nice comfort for me.
I'll tell you what, let's sample another track. How does Nardis sound?
It sounds Nardis.
Okay,
sorry.
Here it is.
It sounds fine. Nardis. That's how it sounds. Thank you.
I want to go back to yes, just for a moment. As I see it, you know Bill Bruford pretty well, and
right.
He is definitely on my hit list of people to track down for interviews. It took me over 6 months to set up with an interview with Rick Wakeman, and when I finally did talk to him, he sounded shocked. He said, "Oh, call me anytime," or worse to that effect.
Right.
I mean, why are these people so difficult to get hold of?
I would surmise that everybody wishes to get a hold of them, so they build walls or, management as buffers, and their entourage acts as a buffer, and which is why it might be harder for these guys. I often will use this as well, although I'm not anywhere near, the fame area that these guys are, but sometimes even in my little stature in worldwide music, sometimes I need someone to actually, run interference for me because people can be as gentlemanly as you obviously are, and they can also not be. So
right.
It's always best sometimes to have someone like in the middle, watching out, because I have a reputation of being a little firm sometimes, which I try not to be rude, but some people are a little forward and don't really restrain themselves, and sometimes I just got to say, well, that's it, stop, that's enough, and hence people don't want to hear that. Ringo Starr said, someone said, "Can I ask you a question?" And Ringo would say, "Okay, but only one." And they'd ask him, "What was it like to play with the Beatles?" That's the obvious one. "Oh, I thought it was great. I loved them all." "Well, let me ask you something else." Ringo would say, "No, I said only one." And a lot of people weren't happy with that, but the man had to buffer himself from people who didn't know how to restrain a little bit. And that's probably why these guys were a little hard to find.
Well, next time you talk to Bill, tell him I'm looking for him.
You're a gunning for him, are you?
No.
He retired. Did you know that?
He was what?
He retired from playing music. He is not a performing drummer anymore.
Right. But I have many of his recent CDs and DVDs, and I would love to talk to the man.
I will definitely contact him, and I will put him in touch with you. That's my promise. I'll even do it tonight. When we hang up, I'll send him off a message and tell him that you're looking to do a thing. I'm sure he wouldn't mind that. He just doesn't want to play out, but I'm certain he'd be, very happy to talk with you. So shall I do that when we make our goodbyes?
Absolutely.
I promise.
In fact,
you,
let's hang up right now.
Oh, I cut my own throat again.
I'm kidding. Okay, where can people buy copies of High Standards?
High Standards is a jazz CD, and I jokingly refer to the sale possibilities of my records as my records will sell dozens. Which basically means is that people interested in music or bass or, let's say, interactive live performance, which is barely going away anymore in the overall view of things, I elected to only use one outlet instead of going broad stream. You can find it here. The
mm-hmm.
only place I elected, and frankly it's working out for me quite well, is cdbaby.com. And I thought that certainly the stores don't wish to have my music, nor do they really wish to have, let's say, a lot of players' music,
Oh, but there aren't any stores left.
No, I guess they are going away, aren't they? Well, yeah, and they're going away because the Internet is taking over, so trying to be a big boy and follow the maturing music business world that I'm in, I elected to just go to CD Baby and say, "Take my CDs, and would you kindly, if anybody's interested..." And I'm a lucky guy. A lot of guys all over the world, they go, yeah, they want to hear great playing, forgive me, and, you know, and it's not around much anymore. In fact, quite frankly, there is very little of music left in the world anymore, whereas there's a whole lot of music entertainment. You follow?
Oh, yes.
And music entertainment has its value, but music today, music entertainment today, the music that many people are entertained by, is as musically meaningful as wrestling, pro wrestling, WWE wrestling, is a meaningful sport.
Right. So yeah, it should be part of the Olympics.
Yeah. You know, when the bruiser is facing, you know, the masher, and they're looking at each other, and I'm going to get you next Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on pay-per-view, Channel 301. You know, I kind of don't really feel these guys are out to do a legitimate Roman Greco event of wrestling. So, and in music, it's entertainment, and we need entertainment, but real music has been sabotaged, has been pretty well smitten by the record producers and the businesses that the what do they call that, American Idol and all these shows?
Right.
You know, singers are the new musicians, which I object to, but because most singers are all cliches of themselves. There almost isn't an original singer anymore. And music is fairly gone from it, you know.
I actually agree with you, and I will be putting up an article about this interview, and I'll make sure that I include a link to CD Baby.
Thank you, sir.
Do you have a website as well?
It's a fairly beat-up website. I've been trying to find a guy to fix it, and one guy says, oh, sure, I'll do it. Never heard from him again. Another guy says, well, this and that. And the other thing, I can't seem to find anybody who is, let's say, capable, reasonably priced, talented, and, let's say, inspired to make their talent seen. So I'm still looking. I have a fairly beat-up website. As I say, I'm fairly behind the times, and I should probably try to find a way to make my website, you know, more modern. So I usually go with, my Facebook or MySpace. That's, and my website, I guess, too, jeffberlinmusic.com. Is anybody writing this down, jeffberlinmusic.com?
Oh, I'm writing it down.
All right. I hope the guys out there are writing this down, because if you're not, I know where you all live.
Right.
So write it down immediately.
Okay. You mentioned something a little bit earlier, and so I have to pose a philosophic question for
no
you.
No posing.
Right. Vinyl's dead. Well, sort of. I mean,
no, it's eight tracks
are a fond memory.
Right.
You know, cassettes are something that today's children ask their parents, you know, did you ever have one? Yeah. Now it almost seems that the CD is headed for the same demise. Is online the way of the future for music?
It certainly appears that way, doesn't it? And I don't think I don't have any problem with society modernizing in the way in which it gets its music. I have no problem with that. I mean, I see it as a growth in the society and the growth in technology. So my wish is that with the growth and change, that the CDs go away and that things go right to the Internet, I just would like to see, let's say, the billions of dollars of sales that a lot of the pop artists have and the companies that have these pop artists. It would make me very happy to see some of that money subsidizing valuable, necessary music that was created in America, I might add, the jazz, the blues, the rock that came from our society, an African-American contribution to the only art that America ever produced. I would like to see some companies subsidizing for the need to support music for its own sake and allow some publicity, allow some support, allow some visibility, some opportunity for people who play for the necessary and emotionally committed need to play music for its own sake and let them be heard. Because guys like me don't look like you know, shouldn't be in Britney Spears' band. Looks count. I don't have them. You know what I mean? Dancing counts. I can't dance a lick. Music is going, my friend, and I would like to see real music get some support.
And there are stage performers and studio performers. Which are you? Do you like the live venue?
I would say I like it better than the studio for the only reason that I'm trained to spontaneously create something in jazz. You follow? All jazz guys are.
Mm-hmm.
In that regard, it's instant gratification. But I have to confess, I love the studio. I just love to go in, play something that I might find meaningful or certainly applicable to the style that I was asked to perform in or on my own records, and hear it back and say, this is a well-represented bit of music here. So I would honestly say I'm sort of split down the middle about that, you know, that music can be represented out of time, studio elements, you know, prepare it, let's do it again, let's try it one more time, and sort of an in-time or an in-performance element, which is, here's what I've got, I just did it, it may or may not have come to my standards, but let's try the next song and maybe that will be better. And I love that sort of tension of what might come because I'm not really sure what I'm going to sound like in the next 30 seconds. I just love that.
Touring is always an interesting escapade. I mean, insanity seems to prevail. You know, you've got lost equipment, electrical issues, the occasional unhinged fan. What's the most memorable moment for you?
Well, I had an electrical issue when an unhinged fan broke. Okay. Sorry. I'm trying to tie them all together.
Oh, you don't have to tie them all together.
I had an insane moment when an unhinged fan broke my electrical cable. That works, I guess. What happened, I would say that the unpredictability of the road, it has to be taken into account. So when things go awry, I'm not surprised. I'm pretty calm on the road. I'm very easy on the road because I know I'm out of my element and things are not going to come off the way it is planned, and it can happen a lot. And a guy at my particular level tours usually in a van. Occasionally I'll get a bigger show than that, let's say, and maybe we'll tour in a bigger van, you know. And so things go funny. I mean, your amps don't buzz. This doesn't work. I forgot a part here. This guy's string broke there. The hotel wasn't what we had hoped. It's just all part of the mishmash of road life. But may I add that road life has opened up doors for me and got me to see things, go to places, meet people, breathe the air of many different countries, eat foods that never would have come into my life had it not been for music. So I'm pretty easy on the road when things don't quite go the way that is planned. And a lot of my colleagues are too.
Let me guess, that would include onion bhajis.
Oh, baby! I would say we talked about onion bhajis before. Music got me to sample, got me to England some years ago, and I sampled those onion bhajis. Ah, Simon, that's funny, man.
I'll tell you what, we're running a little out of time.
Yes,
but
sir.
How about we play one last very quick track? I'm still confused about the title of this, but I understand that Maurice Ravel helped you with it.
Nah. This piece is called, well, my best pronunciation is Valse Noblesse et Sentimentalis number 4. I think he wrote 8 of them. They were little vignettes that Maurice Ravel wrote, and one day Richard Drexler played this piece. I've known it for years. It's something you've heard when you're in classical music. And I thought, let's play it on our recording. So I wrote out a bass part, and here it is. It's just us playing a minute and 18 together on something just brilliant and lovely.
Okay, let's listen to it. There are some folks that are just hung up on the nits and grits of technology, and I know I'll be hearing from them. What equipment do you use?
I use an amplifier by Mark Bass, which changed my life as a musician. It was originally had a coded number, C115, some coded number. That was a 15-inch cabinet with a tweeter, and Marco De Virgilis is the boss of Mark Bass, and he had asked if I might be interested in using his equipment, and I had turned down other endorsement offers for many years because I couldn't get a sound out of the amp. They're great amps, but I couldn't get a sound. He sent me this amp, and in 60 seconds, I played 2, 3, 4 notes, and I was shocked. I'm not joking. I was shocked. I said, this is the greatest tone I ever heard out of a 15-inch combo, because I like the low, thick sound out of a 15, and it also produces highs. So I went to the Marco, and he gave me an endorsement, which I am the happiest camper on earth, and he changed the name to the Jeff Berlin amp. How about that? It wasn't my amp. I didn't invent anything. I pulled the tweeter out of it because I don't like tweeters. That's my entire contribution to this amp. So it's a Jeff Berlin 15-inch combo by Mark Bass, and then I play another bass built with my name on it because I don't like active basses. Do you know what active basses are?
No, I don't.
It's an amp that boosts lows or boosts highs on the instrument itself, and I cannot fathom why people would enjoy that tone. Of course, there's room in the world for the varieties of sonics that people enjoy, but I will have nothing to do with them, and so I built a passive bass with my name in it, with Bartolini's, and they call it a Leo Kwan Badass Bass Bridge, and it's a simple four-string bass, very simple, 21 frets, nothing special, but it feels incredible, and it sounds incredible. So those are my toys, and I've had them for years.
One last question.
Yes,
before
my friend.
Before we scoot, where do you call home? Are you East Base or East Coast?
Well, I live in Clearwater, Florida.
Ah.
And I'm here primarily because I wanted my children to have a nice environment to grow up in. And I had the music school, the Players School of Music, and so when I'm not touring, I'm here with it. And I live in Clearwater, Florida.
Actually, tell us a little bit about the school that you have.
Well, the school is designed to teach music. I noticed that many different sources of education use the word music but don't teach it. They don't teach music. And so many players have often professed they want to play better, they want to learn how to do it. But for some strange reason, they won't do those exercises, and they won't pursue that path that will get them exactly what they say that they want. And the best way to do it is via musical investigation. If you seek out a learning how to play, you know, if you pay a teacher. I've said that, like, rock education is a failure. You don't pay money to learn how to play rock and roll songs. It's a waste of your money. A lot of teachers teach technique. Technique doesn't teach you how to play better either. The way a person gets better is by using their instruments for what it is designed for, and that can start right from the first day a non-reader would read the note, let's say C. That's the first step towards learning how to use an instrument properly. And because of it, I brag this. With this one I brag. I have 100% improvement from everybody that's ever come to the Player School of Music, and I always have had. So music is, again, even in education, isn't exactly highly regarded anymore. But I stand for it in regards to education, and I keep people focused on it peacefully, not overbearingly. You just got to play and read, and you will get better in 3-4 months. It's easy.
Well, where can people find out about your school?
Well, I would love to have people check it out and see if they wanted to come. They can check it out by looking up www.playersschool with one S, Players School, playerschool.com, playersschool.com.
And I will certainly make a point of putting that link in the article as well.
Well, you are more than kind, my friend. Yeah, we have a 1-week intensive that might answer a lot of questions in September. 5 days for people who want to just get away and learn how to relate to their instrument differently. So, well, thank you. I mean, that means a lot. I'm trying to promote music for its own sake. It's not that easy anymore to do.
Jeff, I'm being whined at in my ear. I've gone over my time, and the producer is nagging me.
Well, tell her to cut it out.
Right. I do want to really, really thank you for taking time to talk with me today. It has been a wonderful, wonderful interview.
You are very kind. It takes two to make a good interview, doesn't it? And you were great, and I'm going to contact Bill right now and ask if he will get with you. And thank you, and to your audience, thanks for listening, friends. It's very nice of you to spend this time with an old bass player. You know, I appreciate it. It's very kind of everybody, in fact.
You're not an old bass player.
I'm being a little facetious here. You know.
Right.
That's the biggest attempt at modesty I think I've attempted in about a year. So, I'm just an old guy, you know.
Jeff, you have yourself a wonderful day, and I do hope we will talk again.
I would hope so, sir. It's a real pleasure, and thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me this time.
Thank you. And till next time, goodbye.
Next time. Over an onion bhaji.